Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, new research carried out is called Meaningful Employment Barriers and Aspirations for Mothers on Low Incomes will be published shortly. It's been carried out by our next guest. Among the findings are, because of the precarious or poorly paid nature of many job options, the types of work realistically available for women are just not worth it, particularly those on low incomes. Now, the research is part of a wider EU-funded project which explores work-life balance with marginalised women in no less than five EU countries, and I'm joined by the author of that research, research coordinator with Focus Ireland, Daniel Hoy. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Now, the research looked at a core group of 16 women.
Yes, so these women were recruited through our services in Focus Ireland, so these will be women who had experience of homelessness. Indeed, some of them were still in homeless accommodation at the time of the research, and some had left homelessness to private accommodation. But I suppose, and when we talk about homelessness in this instance, the experience of homelessness for the women would be in emergency accommodation, so that kind of more invisible form of homelessness, so in the likes of B&Bs or hotels or so-called family hubs. So that's the group we worked on, a diverse group as well. So women from an Irish background, women from the Roma community, and women from a migrant background as well.
Now, the report... go ahead.
No, go ahead, Claire, thanks.
Sorry, Daniel. The report came in two parts. One is what's called analytical and the other aspirational. But first of all, tell me, what is Regal Ireland?
So, as you mentioned at the top there, it's an EU-funded project. So, like, at a very broad level, it looks to explore employment opportunities or experience for women who are living on the margins in society. So, five EU countries took part. In Ireland, we worked with women with experience of homelessness. And, for example, in France, it was women from a migrant background. And in Romania, was women from the rural community. So, we had a specific focus, let's say, and that was women with experience of homelessness. So we produced a piece of research that spoke to that experience. And those two reports you mentioned there, so one report really speaks to the barriers that the women faced when it came to, you know, better employment opportunities, and the other report spoke about the aspirations, so the type of hopes and dreams the women had. And, you know, it was very, very interesting research.
Your line is breaking up a little on me there now, Daniel, if you just move a little. In terms of that first report, let's look at some of the things on that. For example, it speaks of the socioeconomic position of women in Ireland, vulnerable women, yeah, and housing precariousness and exclusion, social protection reform, parenting alone, and the problem with childcare, the costs, of course, which is a general one right across the whole sector in this country.
Indeed, yes. So I'm sure many of your listeners will be aware of how expensive childcare is in this country. And indeed, UNICEF recently released a report that says Ireland is one of the most expensive countries in the world for childcare. So particularly if you're somebody who has a low income, childcare is very, very inaccessible. And it's not just the cost, particularly for this group of women. The types of work that were available to them were often, let's say, weekend work or shift work. So they needed childcare at those particular times, and it was unavailable for them if they needed, you know, formal childcare arrangements on a Saturday or a Thursday evening, for example. It just wasn't there for them. So, you know, the childcare system in Ireland was very, very inaccessible for them.
And the second area that they identified about their work-life balance is upskilling. I suppose opportunities for training, upgrading their skills, limited because of their circumstances as well.
Yeah, exactly. So we spoke about, you know, what would help you improve your, you know, your income or your life generally, and the women recognised that, you know, they needed training and more qualifications, but a lot of the time the courses available to them were again inaccessible. So you're talking high levels of cost for a group that's on a low income, and inaccessibility as well. So the types of courses and the structure of the courses wouldn't be, let's say, what you call family friendly. So in terms of the hours that the course, the commitment that was needed. So the women in the group needed a more flexible type of educational opportunity where they could maybe break it into blocks or particular modules and do it over a longer period of time, because they had, you know, childcare responsibilities that were foremost in their mind.
I notice in the analytical report, we'll call that part one, report one, that the conclusion is the literature and research shows that mothers in Ireland, particularly lone parents, have experienced disproportionate barriers to accessing the labour market. The strong male breadwinner model ingrained in Irish society for many decades has made it extremely difficult for women to be afforded equal opportunities in the labour market, much less if they are a mother in a low-income family.
Yeah, well, I suppose it speaks to the nature of social provision in Ireland, you know, since the foundation of the state, and that kind of gendered way of designing it, and that male breadwinner model, and you know the idea of the woman's place of being in the home, and certainly social provision has, you know, formed over decades in that way, and it's kind of had a residual effect on the situation at the moment. And you know, when you talk about caring responsibilities, you know, particularly for lone parents who are looking after children on their own, it's just it's really extremely hard for them to be able to, you know, find good quality employment and a good level of income.
In the second report, the one that talks about the aspirations of these women, the report concludes, the most striking thing to emerge from the aspiration stories of the women was the contrast between how the women who were housed spoke about their aspirations versus the women in emergency accommodation. That, of course, clearly indicative of the fact that how we provide for people in society is absolutely linked to their long-term well-being.
Yeah, so it's something that's established in other research. So people who are experiencing poverty, you know, it's harder for them to think about future planning because they're very much living in the here and now. They're thinking about putting food on the table and providing, you know, putting a roof over their head and looking after their children. So the people who are housed or moved on from homelessness to more secure accommodation, they were given that sense of security and safety where they could plan for the future. And that was in stark contrast to the women who were still in emergency accommodation and, you know, experiencing the trauma and the stresses around that. So it really had an impact on, you know, how they perceived or thought about the future and employment goals.
Now, these women strongly expressed a sense of pride and resilience in terms of the challenges they had overcome. But nevertheless, of course, all of this is bound to have a significant impact on their mental health and self-confidence. And your research indicated solutions could include paid family leave, inclusive childcare, and family-friendly workplaces.
Yeah, so the women in the group were very, very resilient and had, you know, overcome some very difficult challenges, you know, as a result of their experience of poverty and homelessness. And it did, but, you know, they were resilient, but there was a, you know, there was an impact on self-confidence in particular, and this kind of, you know, the self-confidence then impacts on their ability maybe to re-engage with the labour market or to go and look for that job. That self-confidence was really, really impacted. But yeah, but importantly, the research really focused on the solutions. So in the research, we worked together to develop solutions, and we looked at, in particular, the policies of particular political parties and what type of policies would improve the lives of the women. So yeah, we're talking about paid family leave, so paid leave for all parents, irrespective of social insurance contributions, inclusive childcare, which is probably the most important thing. So when we say inclusive, it has to be affordable, it has to be accessible, and then family-friendly workplaces as well. So the right to certain hours, you know, the prevalence of zero-hour contracts at the moment, and so you need to guarantee a level of work and a quality of work for people. So that was really, really important too.
Indeed. REGAL stands for Regaining Life for Precarious Women at Work. It's an EU-funded project which involves organisations from five European countries. Here in Ireland, Focus Ireland, It investigates the possibilities of achieving a better work-life balance for vulnerable groups, and it looked across countries like Belgium, France, Ireland, where Focus Ireland, women with children who've experienced homelessness or housing insecurity, was the focus for them, Portugal and Romania as well, in two forms of reports, analysing the current situation and then looking ahead to the future women's aspirations. Research coordinator with Focus Ireland, Daniel Hoey. Thanks for your time this morning, Daniel.
Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. Very significant work indeed. Now let's turn our attention to the Clanmaynooth Municipal District, Owen.
Yes, and it's good morning to Labour Councillor on the MD, Angela Feeney. Welcome to the programme again, Angela. Before we talk about the municipal district motions that you brought forward, a quick word on the issue at Taiga Doe, which we brought up on the programme recently, and I believe there's also a similar issue at Pikes Bridge on the Maynooth Leakslip Road. It's to do with grass growing in the middle of the road.
Yeah, well, that cross at Taiga Doe, Owen, it's only up the road a few hundred yards from myself here, and it's really dangerous, pulling out at the best of times, but now that it's overgrown. So I brought it to the attention, as I mentioned to you, to the area engineer. And I also brought the Pikes Bridge one, because pulling out of Pikes Bridge similarly onto a very busy old Dublin road there, and it's quite busy. A lot of people use that road as a shortcut. So I'm happy to say that the area engineer said that it would be done this week. And I'm watching that very closely. So any time I go out, I take photographs, and I'm being a public nuisance by sending him the photographs. No, but seriously, it's really an issue of safety. And I've seen a few near misses there myself. So the area engineer, in fairness to him, has said that it's on the list and it will be done imminently.
Okay, motions then that you brought forward to the meeting, Angela, and Mullen Park has been in the news, we know, for the last couple of months, but you were asking the council to confirm if all the flood alleviation measures conditioned in planning applications for Mullen Park in Maynooth have been put in place.
Yeah, and the council got back on saying to me that they're watching that, but it's still under construction. And the reason I brought it there is that the residents that are living in the adjoining estates are concerned about the specific flood alleviation. We had heavy rain there recently and was like a huge pond. So essentially I'm going to look at that when the estate is finished. The council said the surface water drainage network that pertains to Mullen Park is still under construction. So I'm going to keep a close eye on that when it's finished, particularly those residents who are concerned about it. They want me to keep an eye on that, so I'll do that on their behalf.
You're hoping to promote cycling as well among young people in the Maynooth area, and you want the council to provide bicycle shelters for primary schools in Maynooth. What response did you get there?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to encourage students more than ever nowadays to cycle and to school rather than plugging up the roads, you know, going by car. And it's great to see, I see more children doing that. So we need to play a part, all of us as parents and teachers, to encourage them. But as a council, if we as a council can continue to look at ways to support children in doing that safely, but also, Owen, to make it attractive. And part of that is providing good quality bike shelters, you know, to be an added incentive given the climate that we have here in Ireland. So the other county councils I see are doing this, and it has had a positive impact. So the council got back and said that their road safety and cycling officer, Declan Keogh, Declan does fantastic work, as I know you've had him on the show many times, and Declan has said that he'd discuss this with the sustainable transport team and sourcing funding and alternative options so that he'd look at these school cycle shelters for them.
Okay, and then finally and very briefly, Angela, the council develop the historic Geraldine Hall in Maynooth as an information or cultural tourist centre was a motion that you brought forward as well.
Yeah, considering the history of this Geraldine Hall, Owen, which dates back to the 1860s, it's a shame not to see it used to showcase even the building itself. And it's right beside the Greenway, right beside the harbour, and I thought that this would be a very good idea. So the council has said that the matter will be investigated and they're going to look at the current usage of the section of the building. Just the front section, the back is used by the scouts. And I thought this would be an opportunity to promote tourism and also showcase a fabulous historic building linked back to the Fitzgeralds. So thanks again, Owen.
Great stuff. Labour Councillor on the Clanmaynooth Municipal District meeting, Municipal District, I should say, Angela Feeney. Thanks for joining us, Angela.
And after the break, we're going to be talking with Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North, Rhéada Cronin. She wants the 16 to 18-year-old cohort to be paid child benefit over the summer months.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, we mentioned a boil water notice. That's for the region earlier, and the listener reminding me that Carlo also put out a boil water notice covering parts of Castle Dermot. We'll come back to that later on. There is a boil water notice out. I saw Senator Mark Wall tweeting about that. We'll go to Owen in a few minutes on that as well. But let's go. Ciara has Raida Cronin on hand.
Yes, good morning, Raida Cronin, Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North.
Good morning, Ciara. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you. Raida, I just want to ask you, you're calling for child benefit to be paid over the summer months for 16 to 18-year-olds. Now, just explain to me, because I would assume those who are in full-time education up to the age of 18 would be paid, well, their guardians or parents would be paid their child benefit each month, no matter if it was summer or not.
Yes, and this summer they have stopped children who are between 16 to 18 who are not in full-time education. And the problem with this, you see, like, these points, they if you're at home with a child 16 to 18, like, you know how much they cost, and nobody's waiting for a politician to tell them that. And a bit of common sense and a bit of cop-on would have prevented this. It's perfectly simple to keep the payments going like last year. You know, you have the forms filled out at the end of August when the schools are reopened and the kids go back to school. Instead of your families who were dependent on that money finding that it didn't arrive there last week. And I was talking to my colleague Claire Curran, who's our social protection spokesperson, and she has written to the minister about this, to asking that child benefits be payable again to all parents of children between 16 and 18. You know, like, look at the amount of money that's wasted on the National Children's Hospital here, Ciara, and the tax breaks for cuckoos and vultures that vote we had there this week. We're talking about families with children in the 16 to 18 age group, and, you know, families are trying to keep body and soul together with money they're depending on. Not a lot of people can afford to put the child benefit into a trust fund for their kids. They need it every day, every month, every...
Raida, we know that the child benefit, it's a monthly payment, right, to parents or guardians, as I said, of children who are under the age of 16. And it can be paid for children under the age of 18 if they are in full-time education or full-time training. So you are calling for this payment to be given to 16 to 18-year-olds if they're not in full-time education or training of any sort.
No, if they're just for the summer months, for children who are going back to school in September, we're in extraordinary times, Ciara, and you know, a bit of cop-on would never goes astray when we're here in extraordinary times. You know, there's been no change other than a form filled out. This form will be filled out when they go back to school at the end of August, and if there is an overpayment, you know, the department is very good at getting their money back. But it's more important now to support our families who have been, you know, battered through COVID, and especially the young people as well, you know, to be hit with a case of computer says no. You know, the young people in that age group, they really have been outstanding over the last year and a half, as have their families and their parents.
Okay.
And, you know, it's important to... I don't know, just to heap praise on them, not to be hitting them with this. Most of the, it's only for children who are going back to school in September who are entitled to child benefit. And I just believe that, I don't know, there's a lack of thought.
Okay.
It's thoughtless. There's a lack of care for people with this government. You know, we have a huge housing crisis. And,
yes, we have many issues, Raida, no doubt. Look, listen, Sinn Féin TD for Kildare North, Raida Cronin, thank you for the time this morning.
Thank you, Ciara. Back to you in just a moment, because there's news of Dolores Cahill apparently is kicking off a bit in the Dublin South Election Count Centre over the problem there. Just hold on a second, Ciara, on that, because that boil water notice that we referenced, Owen, the news about that?
Yeah, so just a reminder that it is following advice from the HSE, Irish Water and Carlow County Council, a boil water notice for the area supplied by the Carlow North Regional, which is Rathfilly and Tullow public water supply due to a pollution incident in the River Slaney is in place, and it affects parts of Carlow, Kildare and Wicklow. So just to go through those various different villages and areas, Carlow, it's Palatine, Killerig, Grange, Rathvilly, Tullow, Ardatton, Ballon, Ratho, Benacerry and Tankardstown. In Kildare, there then the areas affected: Castledermot, Grainy, Timolin, Kilkee and Ballitore, while in Wicklow, Liscolman has been affected by it as well, and the boil water notice is in place until further notice. And of course we'll keep you up to date. Now, I saw something very quickly on Facebook last night that this is going to be in place for about a week, so it's not like a matter of hours, it's a matter of days.
Alright, inconvenience for people. In a moment we're going to the Dreahead Nua Housing Association's Shirley Eustace will have some information for us. But first, Ciara, I believe Dolores Cahill, owner of the Woodstock Castle in Athy at the bridge just as you go over Athy, although I'm not sure she's residing there these days. She's a candidate, one of 15 candidates in the Dublin Bay South by-election. Mm-hmm. Bit of a standoff with Gardaí, they're up there.
Yeah, we know currently the count is underway since 9 a.m. and Sean Defoe, the Network News political correspondent, has published this video on Twitter saying Dublin Bay South by-election candidate Dolores Cahill is currently in a standoff with Gardaí, who won't let her into the count centre unless she agrees to wear a mask. And I'm going to play that video for you now, Clem.
Committing a crime, get out of my way, please. He did not have a mask. Look, that guy did not have a mask. Come here, get out of my way. He did not have a mask.
Listen, you have no authority.
Is there exemptions to mask wearing?
Hang your head in shame.
Come here, excuse me. He did not have a mask. There was a gentleman there that did not have a mask. Excuse me, he did not have a mask. Is there one rule for election candidates and one rule for everybody else?
Everybody in there has a mask on.
No, no. Oh, okay. That's a lie again.
Yeah, excuse me. If people in there are not wearing masks, then I don't require to wear a mask. Don't discriminate against me. Let me out. How dare you? Guard, don't touch me. That's assault. You did. Excuse me. Leave me in.
Now that is the video in full there, Clem, 50 seconds.
Right, Ciara, right.
Seems fairly like it's dramatic, very fraught. Yes.
Very dramatic, isn't it? Professor Dolores Cahill of UCD. She's not teaching at UCD this year. She has, of course, a considerable history of being completely anti-vax and anti-restrictions and etc, etc, etc. So that's standoff. No doubt you'll see that in your television screens this evening. Well done on that, Ciara, and thank you. Now, to the issue of the housing associations, the voluntary housing associations, which we've been covering lately across the Kildare Housing Association. We had Millstream, we've had a couple of other developments there. We've mentioned issues around Suncroft, Crockton, Agrania, and some of the other housing associations as well. And of course, we have featured Dreahead Nua Housing Association extensively. Shirley Eustace, good morning to you.
Morning, Clem. How are you?
I'm very well. I suppose, Shirley, you have listed in a letter that you have sent. Who have you sent this letter to? You've sent it to the charities regulator. You've sent it to your fellow members. Just an overview. You've sent it, I think, to some of our public representatives, both nationally and indeed locally, and members of Kildare County Council as well. Including, I noticed Minister Helen McEntee is in there. God, you haven't missed anyone in this one anyway.
No, I haven't. And previously I've done the same, Ken. Patricia Ryan brought questions to the Dáil and to Dara O'Brien. And he did issue a reply. It was on Facebook yesterday evening. She wanted to know about the housing bodies and the wish to sell homes to the tenants.
Right, to remind listeners again, of course, the big dispute here across the voluntary housing associations is that residents in these various housing associations claim that they were given assurances when they moved into their houses that they'd be able to buy them, in one case within 5 years, and in other cases once 30 years would be completed, and that the sum to buy them would be nominal. It would be, the value would be set off against the rent. The houses in the region of 45,000-47,000 originally, people feel that they've paid that over 30 years of rental, which of course is linked to income as well. You have written the following letter to whom it may concern. As a member of the company limited by guarantee, Dreahead Nua Housing Association, I, Shirley Eustace, am looking for the following information within the next 7 days by email and hard copy. I want to go through some of these questions just briefly with you, Shirley. Where was the original loan for Dreahead Nua Housing Association drawn down, and what department, and the cost per unit? What was the cost per unit in your recollection?
Our cost per unit was my recollection was 47,000.
Yeah, that's the figure I mentioned. Okay.
Yeah.
Some of these I'm going to go through because the information is obvious. As Dread Noah was registered under the Charities Act, what is the position of the sale of assets? I presume that question is to do with residents' campaign to be able to buy out their own homes.
Yeah, because we have been referred by Dara O'Brien to, in Patricia Ryan's post on Facebook, to the charities regulator. So my question to them this morning was, what is the position of the sale of assets? Because Dritten was registered as under charitable status.
Yeah, so is it your view that because Dritten was registered under the Charities Act, it is possible for the housing, Dritten Housing Association, to sell the homes to the householders?
Well, you see, in our constitution, Clem, in section, I'm sorry, now I have it here in front of me, it's section 7 and it's under G, to improve, manage, cultivate, develop, exchange, let on lease or otherwise mortgage, sell. So the word sell is in our constitution.
Okay.
You know, that kind of way, for the company and the rights of the company for the time being of the company for such consideration as the company may think fit.
And, and the request in your letter is to acquire the outstanding loan balance, if any, and the repayments to the relevant department. You also add, I would like all the information regards to Dritten Noah Housing Association regarding loans, payments and outstanding issues, the position regarding ownership in 2021, and where are the deeds being currently held and whose name are they in? You ask, are the tenants' rents used in any way regarding loans? What do you mean by that now, just to be careful?
Now, as far as I'm aware, that there was no loan. It was a non-repayable loan. So I want to know, when the tenants pay their rent, where is the money going? And is there a non-repayable loan or is there a mortgage? So I'm seeking clarification on that.
Right. You ask, is the money drawn down a mortgage or a repayable loan? What would be the difference?
Well, I'm presuming if there's a mortgage, there's a set term on it.
Right.
And then, I don't know, after that, a repayable loan. I know it was drawn down originally from the Department of Environment, but I just want, because people are saying it's a mortgage, some are saying it's a repayable loan, some are saying a non-repayable loan. So this way, I'm seeking the clarification exactly what was it, specifically what was a mortgage, loan, non-repayable loan.
All right. You also, you've mentioned Housing Minister Dara O'Brien, who's refused to meet you, by the way, as we told listeners the other morning. He says he doesn't think it appropriate to meet members. He's turning it over to the regulator or another committee altogether.
At that point, Clem, now, I wrote to the regulator, and on Wednesday the 30th of June, the regulatory authority informed me that they were to act, that the board of directors were actively to engage with the tenants. Now, on numerous occasions, and it's getting really to the point of frustration, I have wrote to the board with questions about a service levy agreement that's in position for Dritten Noah to Kildare Housing Association for 21,000 a year, asking for the minutes where that service levy agreement was drawn up and who was in attendance. And to date, even though I've requested several times, I'm still waiting on that information.
All right.
They don't actively engage.
You also, and I'm intrigued by this because it seems to be an issue across the various housing associations, not an issue as such, but a topic anyway. You're requiring the latest up-to-date members and directors.
Yes.
Is that, am I to infer from that, that generally people in these housing associations might not know the full composition of the various boards of directors that are administering these housing associations?
That's correct. Now, at the moment, I have the constitution in front of me, and it was updated on the 1st of September 2016. On the very back of that is the original members from 1993. Some of those members are gone, deceased. So our tenants don't know who is on their board. They don't actively engage. They send emails in to the board or Kildare offices. You might get a reply from Kildare offices, but the board of directors do not actively engage with the tenants.
All right. Well, let's see what happens at your letter, because this is the latest one, and you have stated that you are looking for the following information within the next 7 days by email and also a hard copy, please. Could you just clarify for me? You've written to the charities regulator, you've written to Kildare County Council, you've written to public representatives, Owen O'Brien, Mary Lou MacDonald, Dara O'Brien, they're all in there. there, our own TDs are all, and senators are all in there, and ministers. Have you written to the actual board of directors of the DRIHID? Are they included in this?
I haven't included them on this one because I've included them on every other request and I don't get a reply.
All right.
I actively engage constantly with our chairperson and our secretary and I don't get a reply, which is quite frustrating, to be honest.
All right. Shirley, keep in touch with us in regards to this, all right?
So
those are the questions that are out there. And it is intriguing that, you know, without taking a particular view or anything else, that residents in all these housing associations are expressing particular frustrations.
Yeah.
So in terms of overall what's going on, these need to be addressed because these are the people.
And I understand the board is a voluntary, you know, position and, you know, they might have full-time jobs or families or whatever else, but at the end of the day, these are tenants' homes who were promised these homes 25 years